listening to the Stardust Radio Network, www.stardustradio.com, where technology and talent meet.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
And now live from Riverside, Iowa, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk of the USS Enterprise, another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. Your host this evening, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. I'm your host, Joe Montaldo. This evening's guest is Maria Kucha. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. She's a very nice lady. She's also a contactee. That's the reason we have her on the show tonight. So I expect everyone to get their questions in. Play nice, though, and be polite. You know, it is hard for contactees to come out and tell their stories. I want y'all to keep that in mind. I wanted to go over a couple of little current things in the news right quick while we get a little free time. First off, I was reading an article about NASA and astrobiology, and the doctor's name is Dr. Richard Hoover. Now, I find this interesting because, you know, they had just recently found some DNA, I should say, some cells and some ice in the Antarctic. And recently, they've been able to revive some of them. Now, this has given science the idea that maybe on other planets, such as the moons of Jupiter or some of the colder planets, that there may actually be life preserved there or actually living there. So I found that interesting. Just even hearing him talk about it, I had to say I found that interesting. Also, I just wanted to mention this, too. You know, current population today on the Earth is estimated at 65 billion years. In the year 2012, it's going to be around 7 billion. And supposedly around the year 2050, 9 billion. So it's nice to see that the planet isn't growing up. So I just wanted to mention that. Someone had asked me about it. Oh, now this is interesting about Mars, guys. You know, it's one of my favorite topics to talk about. Basically, there's a couple of things that have been going on. First, the European Space Agency did a little poll amongst themselves and their scientists, and 75% of their scientists think that there was life on Mars. 25% still think they're going to find life on Mars even today. That is definitely something I found interesting. Just to hear actual scientists discussing this amazes me. And some of the reasons they say this is one, they just found what they call a saltwater lake. Oh, actually, it's a frozen lake near the equator on Mars. Now, this thing is about 90 kilometers across, and I think they said around 15 or 20 deep. Oh, I'm sorry, 800 to 900 feet deep. So the thing about it is, this is interesting. This is a big chunk of ice floating on the equator. It should be up at one of the poles or down at one of the poles, and it's not. It's on the equator. Now, something else I found interesting is they say they think there's a volcano, an active volcano on the North Pole on Mars. Now, this means you have liquid water. You have a heat source, liquid water, and an atmosphere. I would have to say myself, it's about a 90% chance they're going to find life there. I have to say recently, quite a few scientists in the U.S. have started thinking that way. I think it's around 33% last I had heard of thinking they're going to find life on Mars when we go there. I just wanted to mention it because it's important and it's something we really need to think about and keep in stride. It's something we need to keep pushing for because, you know, for us to find life other than ourselves it's just something that we have to do. It's something that we really need to make everyone understand that we're not alone. Okay, that, you know, even if it's not intelligent life, there is other life. According to science, they think they're not only going to find it on Mars, but they're going to probably find it on Titan and maybe one or two other locations in our solar system. So if you find life in our solar system in four or five locations, what does that mean for finding life throughout the rest of our galaxy with 150, 200 billion stars with roughly over a trillion planets? I mean, this means the chances of life are astronomical. It's something we have to think about. It's something we need to push. It's something we need to keep having researched. I know y'all hear me talk about this a lot, but it is something that's important, and it is something we need to keep on pushing for. We need to keep exploring space. We need to find any type of life out there just so the rest of the people on planet Earth can realize that there is life other than on planet Earth. And at least that's the first step in the right direction. Also, I wanted to mention, they found some more Nazcan lines. Now, I just seen this today, so y'all gonna have to bear with me for a moment. But it was kind of interesting. They found some more lines in there, about 35 miles across this area where they found these lines, 600 miles long and 35 miles across. I found this to be very interesting. They also placed lines being made somewhere around 100 BC, maybe 700 BC, somewhere up in that particular area. I did find that interesting. Also, the type of lines they have. I don't know if any of y'all have ever seen this before. There's a little statue of a man that comes from South America. He seems to be wearing some type of suit, and he's got looks to be some type of helmet over his head. Well, this particular statue is now found in a drawing in Nazca, and I found that interesting because it is something important. Because most people think the little statue represents an extraterrestrial. Someone in some type of spacesuit. Just wanted to mention it to y'all. I know most of y'all keep apprised of the news, but still, I do find it interesting for everyone to keep up with this today on with me. Also, just a couple other things real quick. First, just recently in London, I really want to talk about this sighting right quick. This is the second sighting we've had in London dealing with a large saucer with multiple witnesses. Now, I know we have a very large UK audience. If you're listening to me and hear me, if you've seen this saucer near or around the outskirts of London, please report it to the International Community for Alien Research. Really look for more information to confirm this sighting. It was a very interesting sighting. I mean, basically, it was just a UFO sighting. It was a saucer sighting, but it was seen by multiple witnesses on two different occasions that I know of. So I really, I want to stress that if you're living in the area or you know someone in the area, please ask if they just seen something weird in the sky at night. And report it to us just so we can authenticate this sighting. But on that note, Jeff has informed me that our audience is in the queue. So, Maria, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Nice to have you on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on. And let me ask you this. Now, how do you say your last name? Kucha? I know I'm saying it wrong, so I wanted to ask you.
That was pretty good, though. It's Kucha.
Yeah, okay, Kucha. I'm a thinking in my head. I just wanted to make sure I was saying it right. We get a lot of diverse names on the show, and I hate to butcher someone's name all throughout the show. But anyway, what I want you to do is just, introduce yourself to our listening audience and just tell them a little bit about yourself, and we'll go from there.
Okay, terrific.
All right, well, just go ahead then.
Just start right now?
That's okay. Don't get nervous. Just you just introduce yourself and, and tell them why you come to talk to us.
Okay. Well, my name is Maria Kuchia, like we said, and back in 1992, I had a series of experiences that just turned my whole life around. Basically, what happened was, at the time, I was married, I still am, married with three young children, three daughters, and it was about 3 a.m. in the morning, and I just remember feeling as if I was leaving my body. It really felt like an out-of-body experience, but what I felt then was just this presence of being what looked like an aircraft to me. Now, back then, back in 1992, there wasn't much press or much to do about UFOs, so I really wasn't into UFOs or anything like that. So, to me, I'm just like on this craft. And I remember seeing these non-human beings, and I was shown a large group of children. And one of the children was brought to me, and it was a boy, or it appeared to be a boy to me, but I recall questioning, is this my son? And I heard a response, this is your son? And what I heard was, his name is Elijah. And I just remember feeling this just certain sense that he was my son. I didn't know why I felt it or what was happening to me at the time, but I just felt a bond. And then I just remember being told, it's time to go back now. And when you return, we want you to remember his name, Elijah. And the next thing I remember is just waking up in my bedroom. It was like, I felt like a ton of bricks had pounded into my chest. I sat up. And I had this vision in my mind that was just so overwhelming. And I just kept hearing the words, look up the meaning of his name, look up the meaning of his name. And that night, I remember searching for a book of names, and I looked up Elijah, and the meaning is, the Lord is our Savior. That was the most profound experience of a series of experiences that I started having from that night on. And that's just the beginning. You know, that was in 1992, and a whole series of experiences have happened since. I don't know if you've read anything about my past or...
I've actually read some of it, and then fortunately, yeah, I have a research team, which makes life easier.
Oh, that's good.
You know, we kind of need them. But first off, before we even get going here, because you already mentioned about 10 things I want to ask you.
Okay.
Start off with, now, you said this was your first contact in 92, right?
Yes.
Okay, now you don't remember anything prior to that?
Prior to that, I had some bizarre, you know, paranormal experiences, but at the time I wasn't relating it. But now that I look back, you know, it does seem to be related.
Yeah, well, the reason I was asking is because I know you had mentioned about your child, and I have to tell you that I've had literally hundreds of contactees tell me about seeing their own children on different craft, actually not just on craft, but also in some government facilities, but I find it utterly fascinating. Now, how old was the child, would you say, that you were introduced?
Well, see, that was the thing. He appeared like it wasn't like seeing a human being child, you know. It was a child that to me appeared to be about 8 years old. Now, what was coincidental about that is that I had had a miscarriage, you know, prior to that. It was about 8 years prior to that. I was 3 months pregnant. I had gone to the doctor. He heard a very strong heartbeat, and 2 days later, I miscarried. I was rushed to the hospital. I was in severe pain. It was very, very painful. I was taken by ambulance to the hospital, and then in the hospital, you know, they told me you're having a miscarriage, and they did whatever was necessary, and the following morning, they sent me home. And I was home resting in bed, and I got a call from the doctor's office. And the nurse said to me, you have to get back to radiology immediately. I said, why? What's happening? She said, well, there's a situation. She said, they removed the sac. There was a sac that had formed within me. And when they removed the sac, and then they did, you know, whatever they had to do in the hospital, they didn't find a fetus. So the sac was intact. The 2 days prior, a strong heartbeat was heard, but no fetus was found. So the doctors feared that the fetus was still inside me. I had to go back to the hospital. I had to undergo all kinds of, you know, sonogram, internal, external. They were searching for a fetus. They were certain there had to be a fetus, but they never found one. So that's the coincidence. You know, then 8 years later, I had this experience. Now, when I had the experience, I started telling everybody. I was like, something happened to me. I saw a child. I saw my son. They thought I was having a psychotic episode, you know, because it was so intense. It's so hard to explain it, but it was so intense. The memory is so strong to this day. And, you know, then I, you know, started speaking about it. And, you know, everybody just said, oh, she never got over her miscarriage or something happened. But then what happened was, soon after that, the movie Intruders came out, and I was compelled to watch that movie. I don't know if you're aware of that movie. I'm sure you are.
Where is that?
And because of that movie by Bud Hopkins, I watched it where other women around the world were experiencing the same thing I experienced. And I said to myself, this is no psychotic episode. Something's going on here. And then that's what started my research. And I, you know, and... It just set me forth on a journey.
I can understand that, because, I mean, a lot of people I've talked to, well, when I was with MUFON back 100 million years ago, mm-hmm. Basically we had done a survey and actually done quite a few interviews on missing babies, and this was actually in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back then.
The thing about it is they categorized over 5,000 cases with quite a lot of evidence from doctors.
Yeah.
Actually, over 1,000 cases, I'm sorry. And the thing of it was, is they were well-documented cases. The doctors said they were pregnant. Some of them even had ultrasounds, so they knew there was a fetus. And then, lo and behold, 3 months into the pregnancy, either they miscarried or there just wasn't a fetus. In a lot of cases, the doctor said it was almost like they weren't even pregnant, but they knew they were.
Right. Well, with mine, like I said, there was the sac had formed. Another thing that had happened to me, I would say around 1991, I felt like something was inside me, you know, that didn't belong there, and I kept going to my gynecologist. I just didn't feel right, and I said to him, you know, something's wrong, and he would examine me and said, no, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine, and a couple of months later, you know, I went back. I said, no, this, I just don't feel right. Something's inside me that doesn't belong there, and he began arguing with me. He said, you know, you're just under stress, you know, with this, and life's getting to you. Just relax, you know, learn to relax. I said, no, I want you to do a laparoscopy. I just had this sense. It was just something, even though he was doing ultrasounds and sonograms and nothing showed up, I said, I want a laparoscopy. I want you to go inside and then tell me nothing's wrong. And he said to me, he said, you're crazy. That's minor surgery. I said, I don't care. Do it. And when he did the laparoscopy, he went in. I ended up having major surgery because he found two free-floating sacs behind my uterus, which did not show up on ultrasound. And when he went in with the scope, it looked like fluid. At first, he thought it was fluid and wasn't going to do anything, and then he noticed that he wasn't able to remove the fluid. And he ended up doing major surgery. He said he had to move my uterus aside, and he was actually able to scoop. I know this sounds disgusting, but he was able to scoop two formulated sacs, fluid-filled sacs, from behind my uterus. And I have photos of that. He took photos because he had never seen anything like that.
That's a plus in itself. That just helps your case. It's interesting because, you know, last week we had two contactees on the show that basically described almost identical situations. And I do find it interesting because we've been getting, well, I've been doing this for 22 years. I know you're not familiar with me, but I've been, I worked for MUFON as an investigator, field investigator for about 10 years, and then now I'm national director for the International Community Family and Research. I've been doing this about 22 years, and I am a contactee myself.
Really? Okay.
And I know most people, when they come on and do this radio show, they're not used to being interviewed by someone who's actually had experiences or even investigated experiences. It's usually just the radio host.
Right.
But for in our case, it's just easier because it makes guests more comfortable, and the information that's being given is more, you know, rooted in what we're doing, you know, in abductions, because that's what we specialize in, abductions.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, because there was two ladies on the show last Wednesday night, and what you just said, all of, with the exception of one part, was the last part about the surgery, was identical.
Wow. See that? You know.
Well, I just love to hear that because it just helps authenticate everybody's case that's involved in this. It just, you know, we've categorized now over 5,000 cases, and it's, in retrospect, it's very interesting. It's kind of scary. And we still, you know, don't really have a total idea. That's what I was going to ask you, too. What do you think E.T. is doing this for?
Well, you know, it's
a tough one, I know.
A tough one because no one really knows. You know, everybody has their opinion, and, you know, I've read books, and I in fact, I've stopped reading books. You know, that's why I wasn't, you know, I'm not even up on what's happening lately, you know, because it's to me, I just got to the point where, you know, everyone's trying to figure it out, thinks they've figured it out, everyone thinks they know, and I really have not formed an opinion. I don't know what happened to me. I know something happened to me that, you know, was bizarre, and it affected me, but I'm trying to make it very positive, and, you know, I worry about my three daughters, but I just have faith in God that things happen for a reason, and I just, I don't know why it's happening. I really don't.
Well, if you don't mind, and if it's too personal, you don't have to answer, but I was just curious to how old your daughters were.
My daughters are 16, 19, and 22.
Yeah, okay. Well, tell them just to deal with that. Unfortunately, I know those ages are one of the peak ages for contact. I don't exactly know why it is, but we find out under regression and through a few other therapies that it seems to be that abductions start around age 5.
Right.
Because most people don't remember them until they get, you know, in their 30s plus is what we like to say. It's usually in their 40s, but in their 30s, for some reason, a lot of people start to remember. And, of course, as they get older, more and more people remember these contact experiences. But the thing about it is, it seems like between age 12 and about age 26 is either there's something going on there that it, you just can't seem to recover those memories. I don't know what ET is doing in there. I'm sure it has something to do with breeding or something along those lines, but... It's almost impossible to recover. You can find out that they were abducted because there's bits and pieces, but you can't seem to really get any clear pictures like you can with contactees, say, past the age of 25, actually past the age of 30. And it seems like then the contacts are much more vivid. A lot of people retain a lot more information on what happened in their contacts. I've never met anyone that didn't think it was exciting and scary at the same time.
I know. I think the important thing now, because I do feel, you know, my daughters, you know, may have similar experiences, but what I try to do, what is wonderful with them is they ask me questions all the time, and I just speak, you know, openly with them, you know, just like I'm speaking with you right now. I don't know what it was all about. You know, it happened. I had no control over it. You know, I'm living a normal life right now, thank God, you know, so it wasn't the end of the world. And if they should experience anything, at least they can speak about it immediately and they won't have the ridicule. You know, I went through a very rough time of, you know, many friends and neighbors and, you know, a lot of people around me just saw a change, you know, an immediate change because I was so confused. And, you know, it was this torment of what's happening to me. That's why I appreciate shows like yours, that you allow people to speak openly, you know, and I think it's educational for those who are afraid to talk about their own experiences. And, you know, that's my main purpose for speaking about it. I have no answers. I have no real understanding of what happened. But I can just share with others what did happen and just let them know that I've survived. I survived the experience. I got over it. Life went on.
Well, that's a good point, because it's one of the reasons we bring contactees on the show, is so that other contactees learn that it is all right to talk about your experiences. Because for me, when I finally came out and talked about it in public, it was uplifting. It was like coming out of the closet. I mean, it released a lot of built-up tension and frustration I had in me, and now you can't shut me up about it.
I think that's terrific. I think it's wonderful that you're doing. My own personal way of dealing with it at the time was through music. I guess you know that I've created some music, some meditation CDs. I created an abduction CD, but that was a part of my experience as well. I studied music. I was a classical pianist. I majored in music in college, and then I just started teaching piano when I got married, had children, so I have a studio in my home, and I was a piano teacher. So after the experience, you know, like you said, it's all inside, and you want to just let it out. You know, you need some kind of therapy. But when I was letting it out, people were saying, she's crazy, she's insane, you know, she's this, she's that. What's wrong with her? So I started to meditate and to try to go deep within. I did undergo some hypnosis. I have mixed feelings about hypnosis. Some of it was good, but some of it was not good for me. And what I started to do then was meditate, and through meditation I started to actually hear music. It was like music was being sent to me, and I was being guided then. I was told I had to write this music and record music, and that's the basis of my whole business right now, is Elijah Records. You know, I named my record label Elijah after the son I was shown, and it's like I said, it kind of changed my life, and it's set a path for me.
Yeah, well, at least you found one of the less destructive ways of dealing with it, because unfortunately, quite a few contactees end up in alcohol abuse, drug abuse, things along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. It's sad. I guess, you know, I'm sad to... I have met people like that, that they just can't cope with it. But like I said, I think it's wonderful what you're doing, because I think it could only help those, you know, even if they're just listening, not speaking, it'll help them cope with their own experiences just by hearing others talk.
Well, you know, it is interesting because people that listen to this show and people that come to some of the different chat it formats that we host, I find after they've listened for a while, a lot of them will come forward and tell us. Now, a lot of them, you know, it's hard to get people to come on the radio and talk about this. I can understand that. I mean, it's a very touchy subject, but at least they're talking, and I notice the more they talk about it, the more they want to talk about it. And it's a very interesting thing to watch develop. It's I love to watch. I call it coming out of the closet, you know, but that's my own personal expression for it. But, I mean, I've watched hundreds of people do this, and it's an uplifting experience for most of them. I noticed that all the bad habits seem to go away once they come out and admit to the fact. I do understand it's hard if you have to work for someone. You know, fortunately, I own my own business, so I'm responsible only for myself and my family. So, you know, what I'm saying is fine. I'm not going to get fired over it.
Right.
But I have been one time back when I was in my late 20s. I was a general manager for a company. I'm not going to mention their name. And I made a comment about an alien to one of the supervisors, and they canned me.
Really?
Paid me full compensation, gave me a month's leave, gave me excellent references. To this day, you can call them. They give me excellent references. But they let me go because it was, they were a very Christian organization, and they just didn't think E.T. had a place with God, and which is a wrong thought. But, you know, unfortunately for me, that's how it went down. But since then, I've gone to work for myself, and I enjoy it much better. It gives me more time to travel as well, to get out there. But I really have to get you in touch with some of these contactees. You'd love talking to them because y'all really sound a lot alike. I mean, a lot of what y'all are saying is almost identical. See, I'm a male, so I kind of look at it from a little different point of view. Well, you know, I'm sure the experiments they run on y'all and the things they do with y'all are slightly different than what they do with us. But what I did find interesting recently, and I don't know if you've been familiar with this, if you've seen this, but I've noticed a lot more men coming out and talking about their contact experience.
Yes, I agree. Yes, I have. I have noticed that.
That's unique in itself. It's a strange thing. I mean, I know this guy contactees. I've talked to quite a few of them, but for as many that have come out recently, that was nice to see. And especially some of these guys are in their 30s and 40s. They're career professionals. You know, it's hard for you to say, well, he's crazy, because you've been knowing him for 20 years. You know he's not crazy.
Right, right. I know. But like you said, careers are on the line, you know.
Yeah, livelihood online. Sometimes family don't understand. I mean, a lot of the contactees tell me they're not so much worried about their job or their friends as they are their immediate family. And, you know, sometimes family has a hard time dealing with this. When you go around saying that you've been contacted by ET, they get a little upset about it. My family didn't, but, you know, I'm been blessed, so I'm lucky there. They don't necessarily agree that ET's here, but they don't think I've lost my mind either, so.
But let me ask you something. You mentioned before that your job was very Christian-oriented, and there was no place for this. But I don't know about you, but for me, it brought me closer to God. You know, first of all, God to me is just always a word. It's a three-letter word. You know, I feel like everybody has a different definition of what God is. But for me, it enhanced my faith. I understood, you know, because the way I was brought up in the, you know, Catholic religion, it never really made sense to me what I was taught, but after this experience, everything became clearer to me. It brought me closer to the understanding of God. I don't know about you.
See, that makes sense. Well, for me, it was clarity. You know, I was raised one way. I was raised Catholic, by the way, myself, and it made more sense to me that there was other life to us. There was just something about what I was being told growing up that I knew wasn't right. There was just something, maybe because I was a contactee, but there was something in me that let me know that, no, there's more than just this. And I guess for me it was more like a realization of the truth. I was like, well, yeah, that makes sense to me. Somebody created the universe and many life forms. That makes total sense to me. But, you know, because I always, you know, was under the impression that it's a terrible waste of space if...
I know, I agree. It's nice to hear you say that.
On that note, Maria, we got to take a quick break. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo, and we'll be returning after this break with our guest, Maria Krucha, and taking some questions from our virtual audience. So please stay tuned.
You're listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study on Pal Talk Radio. Download Pal Talk today at www.paltalk.com and stay tuned for more programming on Pal Talk Radio, www.paltalkradio.com.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
Are you looking for an internet radio station with a unique blend of talk radio and an eclectic musical flavor? Join Stardust Radio today at www.stardustradio.com, where talent and technology meet.
Computer not starting? If so, scan it for free at spywarecontest.com. There's no charge, and you can enter our contest to win fabulous prizes. To enter, go to www.spywarecontest.com/stardust.htm.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. We're sitting here and speaking with Maria. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, if you'd like to get your questions in, the fastest way to do that is on our toll-free number at 1-877-34329. That is by far the fastest way to get through to us. If you're in the virtual audience, put your hand up, be patient, and we're going to be taking questions pretty soon. Now, Maria, I know we went to the break and all, we were just chit-chatting, but what I wanted to ask you now, when you seen this child, what was the feeling? I like to just ask, because I know that a lot of contactees tend to be empathic, and I was just curious what the feeling was when you first seen the child initially.
It's so funny you say that, because my first artist name as a musician was Empath. You know, that was it, Empath, because I felt, like I said, I felt such a bond, such a closeness. I still, what I feel to this day is, I guess, the feeling of maybe of a mother having lost a child, you know, because I saw him, I felt him, I connected with him, and I miss him. I miss him, and I feel... and I use his name every single day. Like I said, it's my company name, it's my business name, and I'm forever saying it. And I feel, I don't know, I feel like I'm going to see him again one of these days.
You probably will, because I've talked to several contactees, and a lot of them seem to see him again. You know, when I first got involved with this years ago, the first time my wife told me, she said, "Well, I'm going to abduct you." I said, "Okay, you've lost your mind. Why did I marry you, woman?" Well, no, because it was the first time I'd ever heard it, and I hadn't come to realization of what was going on in my personal life yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was still dealing with my dad had passed away when I was 17, so I was kind of still dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
Really wasn't thinking about nothing else, and she told me about it, and I'm like, well, I've been knowing this woman. She's very bright. She's very intelligent. Her children are all gifted. I'm like, maybe I should look into it, and I started looking into it, and the more I looked into it, the more I was like, okay, and why isn't someone else investigating this besides me?
Right.
And I just couldn't get it. I mean, because, you know, now with as many people I've talked to between personal interviews, online cases, and reviewed cases, I mean, we're somewhere around the 7,000 case mark.
Unbelievable.
And, I mean, we've got a much better understanding of what abductees go through now, a lot of the things, a lot of the procedures that go, because for me it's interesting. I can talk to you, and I'll probably get a couple of pieces of information I may not have heard or something that goes along with something else, and
right.
I'll talk to another one and so on and so forth. Eventually, it starts to kind of make, I want to say kind of make, doesn't really make sense, but it does sort to take on an agenda is what I would have to say.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, the species that are visiting this planet definitely have an agenda. It definitely relates to us. Good, bad, or indifferent, I couldn't comment on that because there's evidence linked to all three. it just seems to be like a wealth, but that means you haven't seen the child since then, the first time you saw it.
No, I mean, I never had an experience, you know, like that again where I was shown.
Yes, you did.
But the funny thing about it is sometimes people come into my life, especially being in the business I am, you know, musicians will come to me for help, you know, to get their music promoted or out there produced, and they'll come to me for management, for various reasons, you know, a lot of young musicians. And there are times, a few have come into my life where I almost felt that a deep sense of connection to them, in a way. And I've helped them, you know, along another path. It's something about, you know, I guess, you know, someone, when I'm always realizing, like, what the age would be, around 21, you know, right now and stuff like that. So I guess because I am expecting to see him again. It's strange. I don't know if the other abductees have said that, you know, like they wonder if people who are in their lives.
Yeah, I've had a few of them tell me that they just expect them to see him walk in through the front door.
Yeah.
But I think that's a misgiven sense, because I think, in fact, that it's actually something a little bit different than that. It's not that you're not going to see him again, because that's what's going to happen. It's just not the way most people realize it's going to happen. But another thing a lot of contactees tell me is they do sometimes tell me they can sense the child, or they can feel the child at different times in their life. And for some of them, it's very unsettling, and some of them, it's not. I mean, different people have emotions in different ways, but I didn't know if you had personally felt that or not.
The way I sensed it, again, was actually through the creation of music. My music is very unusual, and it was you know, when I create it, it's, I go into a deep meditation, like a channeling. I haven't created anything in the past 2 years, but, you know, it's something like when I was creating my music, I was feeling as if Elijah was communicating to me. So it came out through the music. And like I said, I'll send you a copy. Oh, actually, you can hear it online. There's a website, jukeboxalive.com, where I actually have all the meditation music. You can just do a search, you know, with my name, and you'll come to the site, which will allow you to hear the music. You can just hear it right online. So it's very deep. It's very out there, and it was created at like 3 a.m. in the morning, because that's what used to happen. I used to feel a communication occur. I would wake up at night and then get the sense, okay, I have to run downstairs into my studio and create, and that's what was happening. So it was like a communication. It's not words. It's music. So there's a sense. There's some kind of communication going on, and yes, I felt it was from Elijah.
And you're probably right, because I've had other contactees tell me about it. Now, you're the first one I've talked to that's put in the music, but I have heard other ones put it into artwork or into writings and quite a few things. But it is interesting to watch how this stuff all works out and how the abductees express the feelings they have. You know, we talk about non-physical abductions, and I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but a lot of contactees get downloads, where, in a sense, they've been abducted, but they actually wasn't physically abducted. I guess it's more like a hologram, and is the only way I can explain it in our terms.
Mm-hmm.
As far as you're concerned, you're there. Even though your body physically isn't, your consciousness, or whatever makes you who you are, is physically in that location when they do this.
Right. You know what helps relate to that feeling, because the way you described it, yes, you know, I have felt that many times. And when I watch, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Matrix, you know, where he's not physically in this other dimension, but he's having all these experiences, but his physical body is just based on a shift, you know, but he's undergoing through all these experiences. That's kind of how I felt too, because when I, like I said, I had a series of experiences. The most profound one was the one when I was showing the child, but my physical body was in my bedroom, but I was having this intense experience that, you know, was a lot more intense than a dream, because it stayed with me. It's a very strong, profound memory, you know?
Well, yeah, it's part of who and what you are now. It's, well, I guess that's the only way you can really explain it.
Yeah.
It's well, when I talk to different contactees, and they just... It's most of them feel like, in some shape or form, there's some type of contact that stays on 24/7. Now, some of them sense it, some of them don't sense it, some of them sense it sometimes. But it is interesting, because it's almost, it's you know, it's kind of like a baby monitor is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
yet they're just kind of, you know, keeping a barely a psychic link to make sure you're doing whatever it is that you're supposed to be doing.
That's it, exactly. I know. I see that in one of my actually hypnosis sessions that was recorded. You know, I'm always saying, "But what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do?" You know, and I just kept saying that, like, "What is it you want me to do? What am I supposed to do?" But
well, I noticed that, and I shouldn't say this on live radio, but I've noticed with myself and other contactees, they tend to be on the path that they're supposed to be on. Their life seems to be quite easy and without too many problems. It seems like when they start denying who and what they are, they seem to have nothing but problems in their life, which I'm sure is true for anybody who lives on this planet. It just seems to be very prominent amongst contactees.
Mm-hmm.
Like each contactee, they want them to do something specific. They're looking for a specific goal from each one of them, not besides what else they're doing. And I think just some people realize it, like yourself and myself, and some people just try to ignore it and hide it. And basically what it does is it eats them alive inside.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Did you find with yourself, like how your purpose, you said you did investigation, but then you started the radio program?
Oh, no. I started out with MUFON as an investigator. I helped co-found the International Community for Alien Research. Stardust Radio owns Wake Up USA. They actually donate the time for ICAR and myself to do this radio show, Wake Up USA, which has been on the air now for about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
I just took it over a year ago as host. And I got to give Jeff credit. He takes good care of us. He allows us to format the show in the way we want it to go and what directions we want to talk in.
Uh-huh.
He allows the show to be open. People can take questions. They can come in and chat with us. And you know, we allow a lot of people to ask questions and get in. Matter of fact, we may start doing that in a few minutes. But
okay.
It's nice that he's done all of that for us. But, you know, it comes right down to is I've been doing this for a very, very long time. 20 years is not exactly, you know, yesterday. it's just, for me, it's a fulfilling. It's a fulfillment is all I can really say. I mean, I don't know how it is for you, but for me, it's a sense of fulfillment. It's the part of my life that was missing that is no longer missing. If that made any sense at all.
Oh, it does. It does. You know, it's being a piece of it, like you said. You know, in the beginning, you know, there's conflict and uncertainty and confusion. You know, that was definitely, there was a definite rough period. You know, but then, like you said, once you accept, you know, that certain things happen, they happen for a reason, and then just deal with it, and just, you know, it does all seem to fall into place.
Well, it does. It really does. Well, for me, it was once I realized that I wasn't crazy.
Right.
Then I could actually get some purpose in my life because, you know, I kind of started realizing in my late 20s because I had done so much work in the field that maybe something was going on in my life, but there was still that denial, you know. I was denying it. And my 30s came and I was like, well, there's no real denying anymore. It's been pretty blunt and pretty open, so you know, from that point forward, I was all right with it because I could, you know, in my head, I knew I wasn't crazy, and the people who knew me knew I wasn't, you know, totally crazy. So that helped, and that allowed me to be able to move along and do the things that I need to do. But it's like we were talking about this earlier. Someone asked me, does people get into ufology for money? Well, no, there's no money in it.
Not at all.
Well, you know, Jeff spends a ton of money every year on this show. Just in the next 2 months, I'm going to spend between $6,000 to $8,000 just in conferences and fees. And not including websites and other things that we do, you know, it's expensive. Well, I guess if you want to call us an expensive hobby, it's just expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I wish we'd make some money. I'd be a happy camper. But the thing about it is you don't do this to get rich. You do this because it's something inside of you that is driving you to do this. There is no other explanation for it. There's no reason. You know, because yourself and myself, we could have denied it. We could have just led normal lives and had 9-to-5 jobs and not worried about any of this stuff.
Right.
Of course, eventually it would have probably drove us nuts, but
I know. That's what happens. If you do ignore it, that's in fact, that's what I felt was happening to me. The more I resisted and the more I denied, the more experiences I was having, you know, in the middle of the night. Like, I was being contacted, almost like there was this kind of mental war going on, you know, because I didn't want to do any, especially with, you know, like I said, creating the meditation music and all of that, like I didn't really want to do that in the beginning. That wasn't my thing. I didn't, you know, I mean, I had to go out and buy a keyboard and, you know, and now I have a whole studio. Like you said, the money that you put into it, wasn't returned. I ended up giving my CDs away. And, you know, like I said, you can hear it online at Jukebox Alive. For free, you know, it's just because I get comments and people listen to it and they, you know, they, I love to hear the comments, you know, of what other people feel when they listen to the music. But before creating the music, it was eating at me. I was frustrated. I was, you know, having a rough time with my life, you know. So now that I've done this and now, you know, can just enjoy it and do it when I want and create it, and then whoever's, you know, listens to it, gives me a comment back. It's really nice to hear, you know. But then, you know, I don't really have those experiences anymore. I haven't had a nightly visit in a long time. It was frightening when I had it. But like you said, it was because I was not doing what I was supposed to do. You know, it was like I was being told, you're not doing what you're supposed to do. Once I started doing it, I started creating the music. I built, you know, this you know, label and all of that, where I'm just helping other musicians and all of that. Once I started doing that, then I was at peace. I don't have those visitations anymore, and it's really you know, just like you said, it just set me on the path of acceptance. This is what I'm supposed to do.
Really strange, because a lot of contactees tell me that, you know, a lot of them now who have come forward and said what they are have got themselves, they're either working for someone or they have their own business. But it's something that fulfills them. See, I do contracting, and I like to see what I do, the sense of completion I get after a job's completed. When I did it, just gives me a satisfaction.
Right.
It's the same thing with what I do with ET. It's the exact same thing, but it's weird that the two have come together and allow me to work in both areas without any real problems or headaches for anybody that, you know, I happen to be associated with, which is either luck or the world's changing. It might be a little bit of both. But on that note, Maria, I'm going to go ahead and grab a couple of quick questions. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. Aliens of Earth, nice to see your hand up. Why don't you give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Thank you, JoJo. Mike from California. Welcome to the show, Kochia. I believe I say your last name, sorry. You sound like such a nice person, and I like the fact that you're a musician. I had a couple of questions. Number one, what instrument do you play or teach? And number two, I believe you characterize yourself as a contactee, which denotes a certain amount of friendliness, or at least openness, and a two-way path of communication between yourself and the extraterrestrials. What did you learn from them about their understanding or appreciation or practice of music? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hi, thank you. My instrument is piano. I majored in music, like I said, before college, but my main instrument was piano. Now when I record, you know, I record with synthesizers and all that, but I do teach children and adults all different styles of music on the piano. With the ETs and their appreciation for music, what I got from them, because there was the question to me, what is the universal language, you know, and I remember, you know, during one of my contacts, you know, they were questioning me, what is the universal language, and I didn't know the answer, you know, until, you know, they said to me, music, you know, music. So it's a way to communicate without words. You know, there's an expression with music, and they made sense of it to me. You know, you could express anything with music. That you could be in a room with people from different countries who don't understand one another's languages, but if they start communicating through the music, they'll understand because of the emotions that you could express with it.
And it is. You can definitely get a lot of expressions out of music, that's for sure. Let me there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you right quick. Now, you said the first experience was in 93. I see we got hands up, but they're going to have to wait. Now, what was the next experience you can remember after that?
Well, you know,
pieces, I should say, actually.
There were just really some frightening. I only like to talk about that one because that was the one that made me feel good, you know, by seeing the sun. Others were just very frightening. I mean, I had a lot of helicopters. I had the black helicopters circling my house. They used to come in groups of six. I mean, it got to the point where the neighbors used to ask me, why are those helicopters circling your house? I mean, that was frightening. I mean, is that ET or is that government or, you know, why was that happening? I don't know. But this was very frightening. I mean, there was a time I thought my phone was tapped. There was I once saw an unmarked car in front of my house. You know, I called the cops. There was a lot going on. I mean, when I even went for hypnosis, there's a whole story behind that. I don't know how much time we have, but a lot came out under hypnosis, and then the hypnotherapist had recorded the session. I ran out of his office because I was so frightened. By recalling the abduction experience, it's like being raped. It's like being, you know, forced to do things that you don't want to do. I mean, it's just recalling these things that was not pleasant. The hypnotherapist, you know, that whole scene was terrible because I was so shaken up by what came out under hypnosis that I started, you know, screaming. What was that? What did you do? You know, I thought it was his fault, you know, that I was recalling these things. I, you know, got so angered by him. I was calling his house, and he ended up getting an order of protection against me. It was terrible. I had cops come to my house saying, if you go near him, you'll be arrested. So I couldn't go near him, but what was terrible about that is I had gone to a psychiatrist to try to deal with these abduction experiences, and I wanted the tape of my hypnosis session, and I couldn't get it back from him. You know, he was the only one who had the evidence, so me describing these scenes looked like I was a woman who was raped as a child, and, you know, that's what the psychiatrist was telling my husband. You know, obviously she had something happen to her in her past, and it's just emerging now, or the hypnosis just triggered it. You know, nobody was dealing, like I said back then, they didn't know anything about abductees, you know, or anything like that. So it was traumatic for me. I have there's a lot of stories that I could tell, but it was not pleasant.
That's not uncommon, though. I mean, there's a lot of experiences that seem not to be pleasant. You know, it's interesting because we're talking about hypnosis, and I want to say this because I know we have a lot of people listening to us tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are a contactee, or if you're going to use hypnosis for any reason, this is what I suggest. First off, you sit down with someone you trust explicitly, husband, wife, best friend, daughter, son, mother, somebody that you trust explicitly. Sit down with the person who's going to do the hypnosis. You line out the questions, how they're going to be asked, because you cannot lead a witness on this because it plants false memories. So all you can ask is an individual what happened on a particular night at a particular time. Then you have them describe it both forward and backward. You stop the session. The three of y'all, four of y'all get together and then form a line of questions. This way you know that the memories you're getting aren't tainted. And most contactees feel safer when they're getting regressed if they have a very close individual with them, which is just a good thing to do, guys, because not everybody out there is professionals. Not everybody has your best interests at heart. But really, you need to make sure that it's being taken seriously and your interests need to be taken. But a lot of first-time hypnosis, or even third or fourth times, a lot of times tend to be negative experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll give you some examples. I was working with a lady who was telling me about these wonderful contact experiences she was having with these very benevolent aliens, and I thought it was great. I'm like, well, this is good news. And she asked if she regressed. They regressed her, and like the first five experiences that came out were all very negative. And you know, I kind of felt sorry because now she has two things. That she has these very negative experiences and these very positive experiences, which she has to come to terms with and come, you know, make them balance out the way they need to balance out. It's, in some cases, what people consider unpleasant is simply procedures that they do just like we do on people in the hospital, on animals in the field. It's just a procedure. It's just, you know, unfortunately, we don't think it's very nice or very kind, which, you know, I can understand the way people feel about that. It is a hard thing to deal with. And then to come sit and talk to a total stranger about it is even a harder thing. But I got to give the shrinks credit. More and more psychologists are starting to take this serious, thinking this is a real phenomenon. Because in the beginning, like you just said, about 90% of the cases they put off as some form of child abuse. Whether it's molestation, sexual, or otherwise, they were putting off as some kind of child abuse that was born up much later in life. But then they started finding out that a lot of these contactees were not abused and had led perfectly normal lives with no real anything bad in their lives. Except for this.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have to treat it, you know, we work with two psychologists down here in New Orleans, and both of them consider this to be a real phenomenon. They don't think that everybody comes in that says their contactee is a contactee.
Right, right.
They do think this is a real phenomenon. They think this is something that is real and needs to be investigated and written about it and peer-reviewed, and they really believe that sincerely. And one of these psychologists is very high-paid, very well-respected. I like to say she has just a very large pedigree, but she, I like to pick on her. But it's nice to see that science is starting to change. So maybe for me and you, there's hope. You know, we're out there splatting our guts every day, talking to people, trying to get this across. Just you being on the show tonight, just with the chit-chat we were doing,
Yes. Makes
people realize that this is okay. You know, I'm not being hung, you're not being hung. You know, no one's in here telling us Satan's coming for us or any other thing. It just seems, you know.
Exactly, yes, that's right. I think it's great that you're doing this. I commend you.
But now, besides the experience in 92, because I was going to ask you what you considered to be the most positive experience you had, and I had a feeling you were going to tell me one in 92, so we're going to rule that one out. But no, I'm just curious to see what you would consider to be a positive experience from that point. Because it's weird how experiences work. That's why I was asking. But I'll shut up for a minute and let you go.
Well, I don't know about you, though. I do want to ask you another thing. But after the experience, did you find yourself, did you become more psychic or in tune to other people who entered your life?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question because I was raised in a family that actually believes in psychic abilities. So we were taught at a young age that we possess certain talents that most people didn't. So I was lucky. I was always empathic, and I did use it. I still use it today. I won't lie to you. I use it every day in my work and in this and in quite a few other things. Didn't know where it had come from. My grandmother had told me some stuff, but, you know, everybody in the family said, well, you know, she's old, she's crazy, aliens, you know, she's nuts, don't worry about it. But the woman could always tell you who was calling on the phone. She could tell you to the minute when it was going to rain outside. She was very intuitive, and she was very psychic, and if you came in the house, and she'd always finish your sentences for you. So, you know, she kept telling me, she said, these are gifts. You know, it's part of the gift of what's being done to us. She said, not everything is a gift, but this is considered a gift. It's part of the enhancement or whatever you want to call it.
Yes. Yes. I mean, because that's what I found that was happening to me. You know, like soon after the experience, people, because one of the things that was said, and it's on one of the tapes, when I was regressed under hypnosis, one of the things, it was a conversation going on, and it was like they said to me that they will send people to me, you know, and like I had a purpose to help certain people. That's what I found started happening in my life. You know, people would enter into my life, but with unusual dilemmas or something, and I felt just recently, you know, with an artist that I helped, I felt a presence around him, and sure enough, his sister had recently passed on, and he had a difficult situation where he found out his music was being released in Japan without his knowledge, you know, and it was something so complex in the music industry that lawyers and managers that he had in the past couldn't help him with, but I felt as if I felt this presence, and I said to him, I feel your, you know, your sister who had just recently passed on, and I said, and she's going to help me help you, which is what I said to him. And sure enough, you know, after a year of working on this and feeling a guidance from beyond, you know, I got his music reissued in Japan.
Hey, let me stop you right there, because we got to go to break right quick before I get myself in trouble.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. We'll be returning after the break to take some more questions from Maria Cuccia, so please stay tuned.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, www.stardustradio.com, where technology and talent. You're listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study on Paltalk Radio. Download Paltalk today at www.paltalk.com and stay tuned for more programming on Paltalk Radio, www.paltalkradio.com.
Vermont American, US-FURG.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Arlie Ermey, United States Marine Corps. While our armed forces defend our freedom, their families shoulder household duties and emergencies alone. To help, the veterans of foreign wars and Vermont American brand Bits and Blades have created the Unmet Needs Program.
John Fergus here, the VFW National Commander. Please help us help our military families by visiting unmetneeds.com and by purchasing Vermont American Bits and Blades. A portion of every purchase goes to help.
Visit unmetneeds.com and buy Vermont American brand Bits and Blades. Thank you and Semper Fi. Hoorah!
Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. We're sitting and speaking with Maria Cuccia. We're going to go ahead and get some more quick questions in here in just a second. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget the toll-free number, 1-877-213-4329. Again, 1-877-213-4329. You know it's the fastest way to get your questions in. I'm going to get y'all trained, ladies and gentlemen, one of these days. Maria, are you ready to take some more questions?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we'll go ahead. Linda Keeper, why don't you give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Hello, Maria. I'd like to thank you for having the courage to speak out this way.
Thank you.
Are you hearing me, Joe?
Yeah.
And, I just want to tell you that many contactees need to hear this from you so they know they're not doing all these things alone. I'd like to ask you, what kind of aliens do you deal with when you were on the ship with them? Can you tell me a little bit about what they look like?
You know, that's a very common question. A lot of people ask me that, but my recollection is not that clear. You know, everyone talks about the grays. I would say they probably were, but I remember a lot of light around their heads. I really do not vividly recall the large black eyes, although I use an image like that on one of my album covers, but I would think it probably was the grays.
It's hard to tell for some contactees, and there are three species that I investigate. I don't want to say that's all that there is, but as far as I'm concerned, the three we deal with are the grays, the amphibians, reptilians, whatever you want to call them, and human-looking aliens, which tend to take on different people time to time. But
yes, I also experienced the human ones that looked to me very military type. Those were some of the negative experiences that I had. it was actually, you know, the ones that did look like human beings.
It's interesting that you said that, because a lot of people mistake human extraterrestrial pickup as a government pickup, because sometimes they disguise them as such. Now, it's not that the government doesn't do it, that's what they do, but the thing about it is, in some cases, it's not what it appears to be. And it's a hard thing, because, you know, as far as the contactees are concerned, they've seen a human in fatigue. So they're concerned that's the government, but in retrospect, it's not always the government.
Mm-hmm.
But to make them understand that, but which...
In fact, I once went... I had a very terrible experience when I once went for acupuncture. I had met this woman, and, you know, she suggested I try acupuncture, and she had placed me on the table, you know, placed all the needles in my head, my back, and everything, and she was wearing a white lab coat. She was a blonde woman. She had her hair up in a bun, and she left the room. And I was left lying down on the table with these needles, you know, all throughout my body. And I started to hallucinate. I don't know, I guess it was hallucination, but it was like a recollection of something that had happened. I started seeing, you know, just it came to mind an experience that I guess I may have had, but it was with human beings. And it was with a woman in a white lab coat with blonde hair. And I felt like this was the woman here, you know. I was like realizing she was out to hurt me, and I started to get very uptight, very nervous when, you know, I was supposed to be lying there relaxing, but I couldn't. My heart was palpitating, and I started calling her. I mean, I ended up getting off the table and pulling the needles out myself, and I ran out of her office. Now, this woman must have thought I was a lunatic, but I had this vision, like I said, of an experience, of an abduction experience. It became clear. It was like very clear to me of something that happened. So, I don't know. To this day, I can't make sense of it. But she looked like the woman in the abduction experience.
That's actually a common experience. It varies from individual to individual. Sometimes it's a face or a person that sets it off. Sometimes I've had quite a few women tell me when they go to the gynecologist and they put them in the stirrups, that it flips them back into something going on the ship.
Mm.
A lot of them have told me that, and I feel sorry for the doctors, but a lot of them told me they flipped out pretty bad over it. And at least in the first two or three times, I guess I can understand that. I mean, if it's something they're doing on the ship, and all of a sudden you're laying there talking to your gynecologist, and you get this image in your head, yeah, you're going to probably freak out. And I can't really blame them. And I've had other ones tell me walking into surgical theaters have freaked them out. I've even had a couple tell me about those green scrubs have set them off.
Hmm.
What's interesting about that is we've got some cases reported out of Gulf Breeze, Florida, that deal directly with humans wearing green scrubs in a metallic room with a ring of chairs, I guess like regular gynecologist chairs, up against, it's like in the center of a room. It's a very interesting thing. I've had now probably 60 abductees tell me about this place, and none of them have talked to each other. None of this has been published, so it's kind of freaky.
Very interesting.
And it's you know, I try not to touch on it too much, because I don't know exactly if it, you know, if it's ET government, and I don't want Uncle Sam knocking on my door. I get enough harassment. You know, when me and my wife first really started coming out hard on this, we used to see black helicopters. We used to do, one of the investigators we used to work with, we'd go by his office. He was a lawyer, and he had a law office, and he had a nice room set up to do investigation work and interview contactees and stuff. And the man had it set up to where it was soundproof, and he had these little things that would tell you if someone was listening from outside.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we got in that room, that little red light would go off. Every time.
Wow.
You walk outside at Impostados, which is a restaurant. There was a white SUV parked in the parking lot with black tinted windows. We even photographed this thing, government plates. It only showed up at those times when we were doing abduction research, so apparently they could hear us anyway. Or at least they were, or either that or they wanted to know who was showing up for these meetings. That was kind of freaky. That was just made me kind of stop and think, well, you know, I have a family here. I better watch what I'm doing. Better watch what's going on.
I know, but that's the whole thing. When that starts happening, it does get you paranoid. And, you know, like I said, that was happening to me for a while here. And then why? Why? You know, first of all, you know, I'm just a regular housewife, you know, just living a normal life here, so I had an experience, so I'm talking about it. Like, so, I never understood that. Like, why would they want to listen to what I'm saying? I don't think it's anything earth-shaking, you know, especially now that you're saying other people are sharing it, so we're talking about it. So what are they gonna do? You know, go and scare everybody who talks about it? I think those days are over, you know?
I do. I think those days are over, and what our governments are looking for now is slow disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Sensitization program that's been running for about 50 years, where they've been slowly breaking us into the thought that there might be ET. Now all of a sudden they're talking about finding life on Mars. And
I know. They're finally finally talking about that.
It's just a matter of time now. I mean, I hope we get to see it in our lifetime. I don't know if we will, if we won't, but it's just a matter of time now. The ball started rolling. It's moving in the right direction. Mainstream press is picking it up in the U.S. now, and they pick it up all around the world but the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But the U.S. is starting to get involved a little bit. I think in the next 5 to 10 years that they'll go ahead and admit that there's life on Mars and probably on Titan.
Mm-hmm.
Set the stage for them to probably send a mission to Mars. They'll probably find some kind of artifact that would tell us there was intelligent life there. And there we go, you know, and that way we're easily broken in, because first we'll get told that there's microbiology of life running around on Mars, and we'll be like, okay, well, it can't hurt us. They'll find some ancient ruins. Well, they're dead. They can't hurt us either. But it will have, you know, dealt the fact that there is intelligent life in the galaxy.
Right.
All the humans on the planet will have to face up to that fact. That's a good thing, but there won't be any threat because there won't be any alien yet. So I think it's kind of going to be a stage program, and I think that that's just the way they're going to work it out. But who knows? I could be wrong.
No, I think you're right. I agree with you.
On that note, let's grab us a couple quick more questions. So, D-Dragon, why don't you give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Thank you, Joe. We have a listener here in the virtual auditorium by the Nick of Awakenings, and she said that you said you hadn't written music in 2 years and wonders why. Has the contact stopped since then? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I haven't written in about, it's more 5 years that I haven't. My last CD that I composed is called Bridges. And that's on the, like I said, that could be heard at jukeboxalive.com. But since then, what I'm doing more of is helping other musicians who create music. I'm finding that seems to be in my niche right now, is just helping other independent musicians. I work with a South African bass player who traveled the world with Paul Simon. You know, right now I just was successful in licensing his music to Italy. You know, I'm a lot of people send me their music, and I just try to find them deals with it, you know, all over the country. You know, like I said, I have deals in Japan, Korea, Italy. You know, I'm working something out with Germany now. Even Russia has contacted me, seeking different types of music, so it doesn't even allow me time to create my own. But what's happening with my own music that I created, it's like the Bridges was meant for meditation, but a producer picked it up and now used it as background music for Bruno Sammartino documentary. Bruno Sammartino was a world-famous wrestler, and he did a documentary on him, and he heard my meditation music and wanted to license it to be used as background. So that's the funny thing. Like, the music that I wrote years ago is being utilized in various ways now. The purpose when I did it was basically my own therapy, like I said before. I needed to channel, you know, certain things out, but it's being used, you know, either for yoga, tai chi, or background for videos, which is interesting. But I think someday I will create again. It's just that I haven't had time.
I wanted to get back. We were talking about people coming into your life. One of the things we look for is, we call it the core group. There's several of them in the United States that we know of, but there seems to be people. I don't know if it's the people being picked up with you or people from the same batch or whatever you want to call it, but there seems to be people, no matter what, you know these people. It's like you've known them for life.
Yes.
far as you're concerned, you have known this individual from childhood. You're comfortable with him. You don't worry about him. It doesn't matter if it's the first time you've ever laid eyes on him. You know the individual. A lot of these people I've actually described before I've met, which still messes with me. But it is something that does happen. It is something that contactees need to be aware about, because something I learned is sometimes contactees mistake the feelings for something other than, you know, you know this person. You know, they feel all this feeling about someone, and they don't quite know how to put it in a retrospect.
Yes.
I just wanted contactees to be aware of, you know, we are definitely definitely psychic. Most of us are, all of us are empaths. Some of us just have a little bit more psychic ability, but... You know, it's something that they need to understand, not to, to analyze those feelings before they act on them. It's just one of them things I wanted to mention. But on that note, we're going to grab another quick question. And I see Atreides has his hand up. Atreides, why don't you give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Thank you, Jojo. Hello, you've got Atreides here in London. Hello, Mrs. Kuchia.
Hi.
I'm curious.
From London 2 days ago.
Do you think that there's some type of embedded message somewhere within your music? I mean, are you being instructed specifically to use any type of tones or notes, etc.? Do you think that in some way there might be an embedded type of a message? That's my first question. And my second question is... do you think that the government being involved, you talked about helicopters and white coats. I'm wondering, do you think that the government are involved because in many ways you're kind of being the bait, shall we say? They're following extraterrestrial activity in that kind of sense? So in other words, you know, when the extraterrestrials show up, kind of the government shows up behind them, if you understand what I mean. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. To answer your first question, what was happening, you asked about tones or, you know, certain theories. I don't know if you know anything about music yourself, but there was tremendous messages that came to me, not only with tones that I did hear, which is why I went out and got a synthesizer, and at the time I knew nothing about synthesizers because the piano, the tones on the piano weren't doing it for me. They're just I wasn't able to recreate what I was actually hearing in my mind. So the synthesizer helped me to create these sounds and tones. But what I was also receiving was numbers. I was waking up in the middle of the night, grabbing a pen and paper, and writing a series of numbers. A lot of threes, a lot of sixes, which in music theory represents minor and majors, you know, minor chords and major chords. And I, you know, would come down to my studio and just recreate the numbers. You know, I would know a key to begin in and then just follow the number pattern with chords that fit that theory, you know, the theory of music. And that's how I created it. It's very complex. You know, I can get into more detail maybe at another time. But to answer the second question, that has been a thought of mine, that the government would seek out people who were being contacted because they were trying to investigate. I never felt that they were involved with what was happening, but they were trying to investigate what was happening. Either that, or I sometimes thought that they were aware that I was being contacted, and they were trying to more or less make me paranoid, give me fear, you know, by making it seem like they were watching me or tapping my phone, and they wanted me to fear the helicopters. But like I said earlier, because of my faith in God, I didn't become overwhelmed with that fear.
And it's a good thing, because then you wouldn't have talked about it. It seems like it is something that they do, though. I think a lot of times the reason you see the so-called men in black is just to battle your cage.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think it's much for anything else. And I know there are some abduction cases involved, but in general, I think it's really just to rattle your cage. Either you said something you shouldn't have, or... they're worried about something you're going to do or say, and they just kind of rattle your cage. But I noticed with them anyway, once you get out in the public so far, they just leave it alone. They're just like, well, it's too late now. They're running out. Leave them alone. Because, you know, you don't want to kill somebody, because then everybody who's ever listening to you is going to be thinking, oh, no, that wasn't natural. So they just leave it alone.
That's right.
Two questions for you I got from the audience just recently. One was somebody wanted to know if contact has ended for you, or do you know if it has ended?
Well, like I said before, when I was in conflict with it, I felt the contact was strong. You know, it was like you're not doing what you're supposed to do, so it was strong. Right now, there's no conscious contact, but I think spiritually and subconsciously, it's like you feel a sense of communication. Somehow, they're around, you know. It's like they're here, and I can feel it. It's just this sense, but there's nothing frightening. You know, I don't feel myself being elevated anymore or taken aboard ship or, you know, nothing intense. No, nothing intense has happened to me for many, many years. But again, I don't feel like, you know, they're gone. I do feel a sense of presence.
Yeah, you feel them close by. I noticed that we found over the years that basically contact change as the person progresses in their own life and age, learn how to deal with things, but does the change. It really seems the more horrific experiences are in the younger years between, say, age 36, age 15. That seems to be more of the times, especially in women, they don't want to think about it.
Yes, yes.
And it does seem to be that way. And really, that makes total sense. That's, you know, peak breeding ages. I mean, if that's what you're interested in, that's the right time to be doing it. So it does seem like they definitely kind of work in that direction. And it is one of the things I'd like to just know what they're doing with all these babies. I mean, I've talked to, like I said, hundreds of contactees that have told me this. So I'm curious to know what could they possibly be doing. But what I found interesting is I've had some women tell me about going in when the babies were infant and holding them. And then I've had them tell me about ages from, you know, infancy all the way up to full grown.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, when these women, or even these men who have seen their children, see them, they know they're there. Even though they don't look like them, because a lot of times they look more like alien than they do human.
Right.
Oh, the child is there. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no question in their mind, except for the fact that that child is there. And it kind of aggravates some of them because they don't get to see them. But like I said, some of them do seem to have a sense of contact. I also have noticed, too, that the contact, or I don't want to call it a contact, but whatever link this parent and child shares, it seems the information changes as that child ages or as you age, I guess, which is just normal with any child. You know, teenage years are rough on any kid. Even an extraterrestrial, I guess, has things they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But we have noticed that those types of experiences do change, or at least the way the parent feels changes is what I should say, because it's not so much of an experience as a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
They do tend to change. Now when you were writing the music, what I'm interested in is, I mean, you were just, it would just come to you. I mean, not in words or anything like that. It would just come to you like in a numbers or in a notes, and you would just lay it out.
Yes.
Did it make any sense in your head at first until you laid it out, or did it make sense?
Oh, no, it didn't, because like I said, I studied music theory, and you know, even other musicians I showed it to, they're like, you know, this isn't the way it's supposed to go. You know, when you're writing a song or, you know, putting a piece together, there's some basic, you know, formulas or rules, you know, and I wasn't following any of it. It was just chords that had to come in at a certain time. There was really no beat, you know. I didn't follow 4-4 time or 3-4 time or anything like that. There's no beat. There's just free flowing, ongoing sound. But it's just, you know, when people listen to it, they're taken to another dimension. You know, I've had so many different comments with regard to it. You know, I love that. I love feedback. So anybody who wants a CD, you know, just send me an email and an address, and I'll send you one. Okay. So it's just something unique and deep and intense. And like I said, it's a type of communication. Oh, by the way, If I can mention, there is a book that's coming out in July, and it's called Close Encounters of the Musical Kind. And it's written by Michael Luckman. It'll be out on Simon & Schuster Pocketbooks, and it's about musicians from all over the world who have had experiences. So, and I'm included in the book. There's about two pages with my story, but it's famous musicians, very, you know, world-famous musicians who have spoken of contact.
I've heard a few come out in the past 2 years. I forgot his name. He was from Van Halen. He actually came out and was talking about his experience. Who I found interesting was Dan Aykroyd. I don't think he knows he is a contact.
It's funny that you mentioned Dan Aykroyd, because he wrote the intro to the book. Dan Aykroyd wrote it. Sammy Hagar is written about, Phoebe Snow. There's a lot of musicians that this author has been researching for many years. And he, I can't wait to read it. It comes out in July. He asked me permission. He took some quotes from my abduction CD because he had heard it. And, you know, it's something to look forward to.
It is. The whole thing is kind of strange. See, I would ask somebody like Sammy Hagar on the show, but we wouldn't get to talk about abduction. They'd be trying to get him to play music. So.
I don't know. I once saw him on a talk show, and he spoke about his abduction experiences.
Yes, he seems to be very serious about it. I've read a couple of articles he's done. I heard an interview on some late night television, but he was doing an interview about it, and he was quite serious about it. He kind of got upset when the audience seemed to think he was joking.
I know. I think I saw that interview that you're speaking of. I think he released a CD. I think it's called Marching to Mars. And but you know, again, this author has researched him as well, so he'll be written about.
See, that's the thing, you know, people, you know, first thing someone always tells me that's never done any research in the field, well, they only abduct people in trailers in the country. I'm thinking, okay, you're a moron. The number one abduction city in the world is New York City, and the second is Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
The two of the largest, well, Mexico City is the largest populated city in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, New York's up there, so I'm thinking, yeah, okay, these are all uneducated country bumpkins, okay, which personally took offense to, but... you know, I was in the country and the city, so I kind of took offense to that comment.
All over.
The thing of it is when I explain to them where the majority of contacts come from, their eyes get really big. They're like, "You're kidding me!" And you know, these are people. I said, "No, these are educated people: doctors, lawyers, politicians, firemen, policemen, teachers. These are the people coming and telling me that they've been contacted by aliens." Not Joe Wino on the corner. That's not who's telling me that.
Well, absolutely.
And now people are starting to get a sense of what's going on. You know, they're like, whoa, wait a minute. These are people that are legitimate. It's like some of the astronauts who have come out and spoken, and some of the military pilots and airline pilots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it takes courage to get out there and speak about it, but it's making people understand that, oh, yeah, they're taking a very large cross-section of the population, a large variety of styles of life. People really need to know that because, you know, the first abduction everyone ever thinks about is Betty and Barney Hill, which, by the way, I don't even think is real abduction. But that's the first one people think about.
Right.
For some reason, because of the way that case was handled, it's got kind of a little comic relief to it, and that's how people want to think about it. But, you know, it's time for them to change and realize this is a real phenomena. There is real damage being done to these people. These people need help. They need counseling. Or they just need someone to speak to, but someone should be, and we try to offer it to everybody. We have message board forums, we have chat rooms you can go to and discuss your experiences. You can contact a personal investigator and discuss them. We want people to know there's an avenue to talk about this.
That's great. I wish there was one back in 1992.
About that. Well, that's one of the reasons it's got formed, because when I first, you know, when I was really into this hot and heavy, and there was no one to talk to. MUFON, even though I was with them, was kind of like, yeah, okay, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a particular experience that happened in Gulf Breeze, Florida. And it's a very touchy, it's a very sensitive, very touchy experience, and it does involve extraterrestrials and the government, and they didn't want to have nothing to do with it. They were like, we don't even want to talk to you about this. I'm kind of like, you got to be kidding me. But anyway, on that note, Maria, we got to take another commercial. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to please stay tuned to Wake Up USA, a UFO study. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo, and we'll be returning after this commercial to take some more questions from our virtual audience. So please stay tuned.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, www.stardustradio.com, where technology and talent meet. You're listening to Wake Up USA, a UFO study on Pal Talk Radio. Download Pal Talk today at www.paltalk.com and stay tuned for more programming on Pal Talk Radio, www.paltalkradio.com.
Join the Lady CP Hour live for top music showcases Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, here on Stardust Radio, where technology and talent meet. That's www.stardustradio.com.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseekeratroswell.com. That's truthseekeratroswell.com. The truth is here.
You're listening to the Stardust Radio Network, where talent and technology meet.
Good evening and welcome back to Wake Up USA, a UFO study, a Stardust Radio production. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. I'm sitting and speaking with Maria Kucha. I'm going to go ahead and grab a couple of quick questions. I know y'all have been very patient tonight, which I appreciate. So, Sin Q, why don't you give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Yeah, Maria, I just want to say that I really enjoyed listening to you so far. What I need to ask is, have you ever tried any binaural recordings, working with alpha, theta, gamma, you know, frequencies? And secondly, do you believe that it's possible that a lot of your music is channeled from your son to you and goes into your music? Like they say, music is a form of communication. Do you believe that's true, and is it coming from him? That's about all. Other than that, I really enjoyed you. You're the first guest I've really enjoyed and I've treated really nice. So I'm just enjoying tonight very much.
That was a great compliment. Thank you very much. Your first question, you know, it's very interesting that you brought that up. As I said before, I haven't written recently, but things are happening with the music that I did write. Currently, there is a producer working with a world-renowned psychologist, and what he has done was taken... The name of the project is STAV, S-T-A-V, and it's Synchronized Technology Audio Visual. So it is very detailed and complex, and you would probably have to talk to the producer to get, you know, more fine details with it. But he found my music to be just what he was looking for. He has been searching for music for this project, in which what he is doing is taking visual scenes that he himself videotaped from around the country, and he's synchronizing music, and he is placing some visual effects of very fine night white lights that will show through the video. And then, on top of that, this world-renowned psychologist is making positive affirmations for various psychological needs. It's going to be a series of 15-minute tapes, and it will help people with things like depression or compulsive behavior, you know, all different types of things. So he's currently working on it, and... Again, I didn't consciously know what I was doing with these various frequencies, but those frequencies seem to be there, because he has commented that he's been searching, and this music just fits his entire project. So, again, I'll let you know more about that when it's released. I forgot what the second question was. There was another question.
We'll get Sin to put it in text for us or come back and ask again. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget the toll-free number, 1-877-213-4329. It's the fastest way to get to ask the guest a question. It's much faster than the virtual audience. Again, 1-877-213-4329. Please give us a call. Sin, what was that question? I know that you're not a very patient person, so why don't you type it in? He was just wanting to know if you felt like that your son was channeling music.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's funny. I had gone to a psychic about 2 years ago, and it was actually a gift, you know, that my mother bought me in this session with a psychic, because I really haven't gone to psychics myself in years. And when I went to the psychic, one of the things he said was, Elijah is here, and Elijah is upset with you. Elijah wants you to know the music is from him, and he is sending you more music, but you're not listening, and he's upset. Because, in other words, he wanted me to create more music, and according to the psychic, it was coming from him, and he seemed to be upset with me.
Didn't know it was coming from him, that's all. Let me ask you this now. I know you probably got a vague outlook of what the child is, because a lot of contactees don't really remember. But I just wanted to ask you, do you remember him being a hybrid? I mean, or was it just the overall sense of just seeing him? Because I know for some reason some contactees actually get a very vivid view, but some seem to get, I don't know, it's more like a feeling, a sense. I mean, you see it, but it's more like a feeling than it is actual seeing. I don't know how to describe it.
I got a definite sense of it being a hybrid. I remember I described, there was actually an artist actually drew a caricature of my description once in an article. But I the main thing that stood out from what he looked like was very long, thin arms. His arms were, you know, just unusually long, you know, just longer than an average 8-year-old boy's arms would be. So I remember that because I remember him actually lifting his arm and slowly waving to me, giving this very slow motion kind of a wave. And his head did seem to be a little slightly larger. I remember him being very thin, not too tall. You know, the size is about the size of an 8-year-old, I would say. But the arms are what stood out for me. I don't know why, but they just seemed longer than an average child.
It's just a little disproportionate, because their bodies are a little disproportionate, well, at least compared to ours, which I find.
Yes.
Well, let's grab another quick question. Oh, Aliens Are Us, nice to see you back with your hand up. Why don't you give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Thank you very much, JoJo. Mike from California. Maria, I'm not sure if you're monitoring this in the Paltalk virtual auditorium, but you've really captured everybody here in the room. They're very enchanted by your voice and presence.
Oh.
And I must say, I am too. You are a very, very nice person.
Okay.
I would like to pose a very thoughtful question to you, and that is, the whole experience of abduction and alien contact between human beings and aliens seems to be fraught with trauma, physical or mental or emotional pain, a lot of problems. Have you, or do you think at some point it's necessary to tell the aliens that if you want to talk to and communicate with human beings, that a first rule is one of respect? If you want to talk to us, approach us in the open, openly, face-to-face, using verbal contact, you know, and respect all the way around, because the way they're doing it now is rather traumatizing.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your compliments. I greatly appreciate that, but you just described in a subtle way, you know, exactly how I have felt. I mean, what I have screamed out in a room by myself. I, you know, screamed those words out. You know, if you want me to do something, then, you know, appear to me. Appear, you know, show yourself. And I think that's a bit of, you know, why there is a part of me that is resentful. People do ask me, why aren't you still writing music? Why don't you do that? You know, we want more music and this and that. But I think you just explained why. It's frustrating. You know, okay, I've done this. Okay, so what are you going to do? Are you going to show me him again? Or what am I getting out of this? It doesn't always make sense to me. Like Joe said, there's no money behind it. It's not like I'm, you know, a billionaire over selling CDs. I end up giving my CDs away to people. So it's not about making money off of it. So what am I getting out of it? You know, so this is very nice tonight, hearing some compliments. I haven't spoken publicly in years. You know, I spoke a little bit in the past when it was happening, when I had the abduction CD, you know, but I haven't spoken, so it's nice to get these compliments. But really, what is the real purpose? I do not really, really know. And I have felt that I have, every once in a while, I have lost it, and I'll just start screaming, show yourselves to me, you know, where, you know, have the guts. Why did you do that to me? What is this all about? So, I mean, yes, I have done that.
Next time I'll have you on the show, I'll have to tell you what happened when I did that one night. Time we have remaining, but let's just say it was very interesting. It changed me in ways that I don't think I still realize, but it was something that I had come to a point where I was, all right, look, I'm doing this in my life, I'm doing that, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. If you're going to keep, how can I put this nicely, messing with me, then we need to... I was not near that polite. My wife was with me. She actually seen what happened. That was interesting in herself because they actually revealed herself to both of us at the same time, which had never happened prior.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Yeah, well, it scared the hell out of me.
Wow.
No, actually, it was a positive experience. It really was. All in all, it was... It's one of those experiences that it kind of appears to be negative, but in reality, it was a very positive experience, at least for me. And but, you know, you learn to deal with those things. Hey, I see Ralph's got his hand up, so Ralph, why don't you come up and ask us a question? Give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Yes, thanks very much, JoJo. Hi, Maria. This is Ralph's from Ireland. I hope my microphone is working okay. As it usually doesn't. But if you hear me, I just want to ask you, did you ever see the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind? I mention this because it contained certain musical tones. Were you in any way impressed by this, or influenced by it, or inspired by the fact that music was used in that movie? And were you aware that the actual aliens that you are describing with the long, slim arms were actually featured in that movie also? Thank you.
Did you catch all of that, Maria?
Yes, I got that. Thank you for your question. I, in fact, did see that movie, and if you recall, the French scientist named Jacques Vallée, he has written many books, and I contacted him because when I created the abduction CD, I asked permission from him to quote from his books because I liked his theories on the multi-dimensions. He felt the contact was through tapping into different dimensions, and I was very impressed with his writing, and he was very kind and gave me permission to put a quote from his book on my liner notes and my CD. Yes, I was impressed with the tones as a means of communication. If you listen to my music, it does not sound the way those sounds were represented there. you know, with just different tones. My music is a blend, excuse me, a blending of sounds, but I definitely related and appreciated that scene in the movie.
Interesting. And so, I guess we got time for one more question. Elite Jazz is going to be the last question, ladies and gentlemen, but Elite Jazz, why don't you come up, give us your first name and your location, and you're live and on the air with Maria.
Hello, JoJo. Hi, Maria. This is JD from California. I was wondering, you said that the universal language was music, that they told you this. What else did they tell you? And the second part of the question is, what is your music trying to tell people?
I'll send you a CD and you tell me.
There you go.
You tell me. You tell me what it does for you. I really have no solid answer. I have speculation, but no solid answer. And I think that's the whole purpose. I think it's just a matter of, I'm not supposed to tell everyone anything, but you're supposed to gather your own concepts and, you know, your own perceptions of what you're getting out of listening to it, and then deliver that news back to me.
Yeah, that's the best way to handle that. That way you can listen to the CD and tell Maria what you thought about it. See, it works out good for everybody involved. I'd actually pick something up out of the music, because music does seem to free the mind on time. At least mine, it does anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I can sit in a room and turn the lights off, turn the music on, and just be just as happy as doing anything else on planet Earth.
Yes.
But that's me personally. I know some people can't sit still. When I was younger, I couldn't sit still. If you tried to put me in a room in the dark with music, it ain't what going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you, I always guarantee, especially with the Bridges CD, whenever I know someone's going to listen to it, I guarantee they never hear the last track. Never.
Uh-oh, put some night-night?
They completely zone out.
That's a good thing, because I wanted to ask you earlier, because you know you had said that about the contacts at 3 in the morning. A lot of contactees I talk to, let's just say they have trouble sleeping at night. They don't have trouble sleeping. They can sleep, but just have trouble sleeping at night, especially between, say, the hours of 2 a.m. and 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be quite prominent amongst contactees. It's not, you know, people always think that contactees only get abducted in their sleep in their bed, which is not true. They get abducted out of their automobiles, out on the beach. They get abducted all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is, in a lot of the cases, it is while they're asleep, and it is, you know, in their bedroom, which I hate that because of the sleep paralysis thing. People always want to tell me, oh, they've got sleep paralysis. I said, really? I didn't know sleep paralysis involved floating through walls, but...
Exactly.
I'm actually kind of rude about it, but, you know, I didn't know if you had those experiences yourself, because a lot of contactees just have a hard time sleeping, and I just thought I'd ask.
I used to, but no longer. Yeah, now I'm fine.
You know, that's interesting, because 90% of the time now, I sleep good. When I go to sleep, I'm still kind of a late-night person, but when I go to sleep, I sleep good.
Yeah, no, I do. I sleep well. You know, occasionally I'll wake up at around... At the time, I mean, I would wake up... It was always the same time. It was amazing. But, you know, occasionally now I'll wake up in the middle of, you know, around 3 o'clock, but nothing... You know, I pretty much sleep well during the night.
I get a bunch of contactees that tell me they wake up always at the same time. A lot of them are 3:33 in the morning. A lot of them are 2:22 in the morning. A lot of them are 4:44 in the morning, which is just odd. But they wake up at that time every morning. It doesn't matter where they're at. They don't have to be in their own bed. They can be anywhere. They just wake up. If for some reason they just wake up and they sit up in bed for a few minutes and then they go back to sleep. But it is weird, and it is something that happens amongst contactees on a regular basis. Which I can understand if you thought E.T. was coming in to get you in the middle of the night, you might want to stay awake.
That's right. I had an experience once with a musician who contacted me after he heard my abduction CD, and he came out here basically, I think, to challenge me, you know, because it's a concept CD, and I basically tell my whole story, and he was questioning me, and, you know, then he left. That night I went to sleep. and I woke up, and it was as if I heard somebody saying, "Look at the clock." And I looked at the clock, and it was 1:56 a.m. And I felt as if I could hear this person who I had just met that day asking me questions. And I can literally hear his questions. So the next day, I contacted him. I called him up, and he answered the phone. He said, "Hello." And I said, 1:56 a.m. And he dropped the phone. He dropped the phone, he said to me, "I was trying to communicate with you at exactly 1:56 a.m. I said, "I know, I heard your questions." I said, "But do me the favor, next time just call me during the day. let me sleep at night." We ended up producing a whole album together. You know, he wanted to write music with me, and we did.
It's interesting because contactees, they sense it, they hear it. You know, it's interesting because when I talk to them, especially the ones that are telepathic, not the empathic ones, but the telepathic ones, you know, it's weird because none of them quite image or hear or see things the same way. Some of them tell me they see it in a visual image. Some tell me they hear it. Some tell me it's like text. And some say it's just simply in their head. It's just an individual in their head, and they're trying to get them out. It is a strange thing. I mean, it's kind of weird because there's no real way to say that, you know, you're seeing it, you're hearing it, you're smelling it, whatever. It seems to be different for different contactees.
Mm-hmm.
They all seem to be getting the same thing. They're reading people's thoughts. They're understanding. You know, a lot of them, I find it funny, especially when I talk to their spouse, they say it's kind of aggravating when they get in an argument with their husband or wife and the partner's doing both the argument, you know, both sides of the argument. It can get quite irritating, but yeah, it is something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of times when their kids come in and the kids get ready to lie and the mom or dad looks down at them, it's like, well, you know, reason to, mom already knows what happened. And so just tell her and get it over with. I find that interesting. And another thing I found, you know, I know parents, you know, have a sixth sense about their own personal children.
Yes.
What I found interesting about contactees is they tend to know when another contactee is in trouble. I guess, like we were talking about the core group earlier, maybe it's the ones from the same group, but they tend to know it. And I've watched quite a few of them agonize over trying to figure out where this feeling was coming from. And a lot of them, lo and behold, come to find out that it's very close to that's having these experiences that just hasn't said anything.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is when they start talking about what they've been seeing in their dreams or hearing or stuff, you know, a lot of times a person will come out and say, "Well, that's what happened to me the other night." And they're like, "Oh, okay, now I see what's going on."
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of them are just learning they have these abilities and they don't know how to focus. You know, it's a hard thing. First, it's a hard thing to understand that you have this.
Oh, absolutely.
Without thinking you're crazy. And then you have to learn how to use it. Just knowing you have it don't mean you can use it. We figure that most of the people on this planet are psychic in one form, fashion, or another. It's just 90% of them don't have a clue.
Well, that's it. Absolutely.
But, you know, I noticed that people who have had contact, once they realize they have had contact, it tends to change. It seems like their abilities become much more prominent in their life. The people use them a lot more. And, you know, and they can be used. That's what they're there for. I mean, you can use them to enhance your own life, both in the way you feel about someone, the way you conduct yourself, and the way you conduct business. I have to tell you, for me, when I hand someone a bid, and I shouldn't say this on the air, but when I hand someone a bid, I know as soon as I hand that bid whether or not that person's going to give me that job or not. And I find that very interesting. It also allows me, if I'm going to negotiate a job, if I particularly come in high on a job because I want to negotiate it, it allows me to negotiate for what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, over the years since I've learned about it, it's paid off in major ways.
That's great.
It really has, but... You know, but it's also a hard thing. I mean, have you ever just walked in a room and got a sense of being really happy or really sad for no apparent reason whatsoever?
Pick up on the energy, you know, that's around.
Yeah, because I've noticed in some contactees, especially ones that are just starting to contact, they'll walk into a crowd, and all of a sudden, you know, they'll start crying or laughing, and they can't figure out why, and it's somebody else they're picking up on. It's not their self. And I do find that really interesting. And they also can purvey it as well. We did an experiment. It was about 5 years ago. We had gotten two empaths and a group of people together. And we asked the empaths to project a feeling of being sad. 90% of the people in the room said they felt overwhelmingly like they wanted to cry.
Mm-hmm.
We had used it with a girl. I had just had a recent death in the family, so it was much easier that way. But they picked up the sense, and then we asked them to purvey a sense of, you know, laughter, a happiness. And almost all of them picked that up. So, and these aren't people who were telepathic, just normal, everyday people we brought in this group. And they seem to pick up on it quite well, which means these contactees are transmitting quite good. I know you have a website. Why don't you mention it right quick so everybody knows where to find you?
Oh, sure. It's ElijahRec.com. ElijahRec.com for Elijah Records.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's an easy one for y'all to remember. It's an easy one. I like those short eddies. I hate them long ones.
I know.
Something I didn't know if you were aware about. You know, when we're broadcasting, we go out around the United States, but we go out across 48 countries as well. That's why you've heard some of the questions coming in from the UK. We actually got a very large audience in the UK.
That was wonderful. I was surprised.
Kind of nice because, you know, we get a lot of feedback. I like it because U.S. people think one way. And everybody else on the planet thinks a different way. So when they start emailing me or writing me about their contact experiences, they describe it in a different way. I mean, they're describing the same experience. They just have a different look on it, which I find to be interesting. Kind of scary, but kind of interesting. But like I was saying earlier, if you're out and about this year, we're going to be hitting quite a few of the conferences around the country. Everybody seems to be inviting us. You know, they're going to give us press passes and let us have the run of the place. So I'll be over there aggravating the daylights out of all the ufologists. You know, one thing about it is, and I'm sure you've noticed by now, that our audience, it is an international audience. Most of the audience that contributes as far as question goes are ufologists themselves. And they actually respect the people who are willing to come out here and talk to it. And then there's the fact that we just don't take no BS either.
That's great. You have to let me know when you come to New York.
Actually, we'll be in Washington in Maryland in April. The X Conference. We'll be up there with Stephen Bassett. Matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Bassett will be on the show next week discussing the X Conference. Just thought I'd mention that to everybody. But I know we're getting short on time here. We got about 3 minutes. I really want to thank you for being on, and I'm going to get Miss Georgia to get in touch with you to get you rescheduled.
Okay, thank you.
Because I know we barely touched on any of your information tonight, but you know, I wanted you to feel comfortable. And you know, I enjoyed listening to you talk myself. Anytime I have a contact you come on a show, I enjoy it. Because it just makes the job easier.
Yes.
Really well. And if I get an email or if I do get an email on the show, I'll have Miss Georgia forward it to you.
Okay. And I'd like to send you some music for your show, too. I'll send you some. So you have to send me your address.
That's not a problem. I'll get her. She takes care of all of that stuff for me. Without her, I'd be lost 90% of the time.
Okay, great.
She does a lot of it. My wife does a lot of the research. It saves me. All right. And they're just nicer than I am anyway, so.
That's nice.
I should say they're more patient than I am because, you know, for me, I figure you're a contact, you're a ufologist, someone off is going on radio to discuss it, you should do it. But some people, you know, I don't know. Ornery, and I don't agree with everything that's in ufology out there right now. A lot of what's going around, I think, is absolute total BS, and someone needs to challenge it, and that's what we're here for. But again, I want to thank you, Maria, for being on the show with us tonight. I really appreciate you. I'm going to get Miss Georgia to get that information and get you rescheduled.
Okay, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to tell you that brings us to the end of another episode of Wake Up USA, a UFO study. I'm your host, Joe Montalvo. Next week will be Stephen Bassett on the show. You know, we encourage audience participation. If you have a comment that you would like to drop to us or you'd like to request a guest, you can reach us at www.icar1.com. That's icar1.com. That's the easiest way to get your comments across. Also, shortly following Wake Up USA, please come join us, Lady ZB Hour. You know she has the sexiest voice in radio, other than mine, of course, now. Let's be honest. She's got a sexy voice, but, you know, I have the sex. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, I hope everyone has a good evening, and I hope to see y'all next week. So come back and see us. Good evening.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Mr. Nudist Colony Activity Coordinator.
Wearing nothing but a whistle and a clipboard, you're living the real American dream. Getting paid to think up fun things to do naked.
Running free.
Sure, there's danger. Vinyl chairs, sunburns, chafage.
and lawn darts completely out of the question. Watch out! Your keen instincts tell you to stick to activities that involve lots of bouncing and jiggling. And if that doesn't work, who cares? You're all naked. It's your birthday. So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, nudie boy. Because we all know, when the going gets tough, the tough get naked. Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Have you always wanted to know the truth about things like UFOs, underground bases, Area 51, the Great Pyramid at Giza, and the Roswell incident of 1947? If so, look no further than Dennis Ballfaser's cutting-edge research. There's no woo-woo factor here, folks, just the facts as he researched them. Dennis's lectures are available on video and audio cassette. For more information and free access to Dennis's research, visit his website, www.truthseeker@roswell.com. That's truthseeker@roswell.com.